Good afternoon. Welcome to the Friday Report. Thanks to John for the Isle of Wight today. My name's Lucy Morgan. It's a hard-hitting Friday Report today, and we make no apologies for that. We're heading towards Christmas. This is a time when violence in the home increases, and sometimes sexual violence too. And joining me on the show today, two ladies who've come in to talk about that with very first-hand and real experiences. This is going to be a hard-hitting listen, but one that definitely needs to be aired today. And I can't thank them both enough for coming in. Joining me is Hannah. Hannah lives on the Isle of Wight. She has been the victim of abuse in her life, and she's coming to talk about her experiences and how she managed to get out of the situation that she found herself in. And we're also joined by Jane Brading from the Hampton Trust. They're going to be talking about their first-hand and very real experiences. And at the end, if you are affected by any of the issues that we're going to be talking about, then I will give you some details about how you can seek help if you are affected by this on the Isle of Wight. Welcome to the studio. Thank you so much for joining me today. Jane, just tell me a little bit about, first off, your job and your title and what you do.
I'm a independent sexual violence advisor for Hampton Trust. The Is for Service is a advocacy and support service that networks with other agencies to ensure appropriate advice. So anybody over the age of 18, male or female, then obviously I can put in support for them and signpost them should that be something they need. I can also help them with the police process. And also, if it was go to court, I can support them through the court process.
Jane Brading, thank you so much for joining us today. And we've been joined as well by a lady who has very courageously decided to join us in the studio. We're going to call you Hannah. And you very courageously dropped into the station and said, you know what, I want to talk about this. So can I just, Hannah, get you to tell me a little bit about what happened to you?
Well, when I was younger, from the age of 3 to the age of 13, my stepfather sexually abused me. So after 30 odd years, I decided that I was going to do something about it to make my life better. And that's what I did. I went to the police and I haven't looked back ever since.
I can't even begin to imagine what it must be to be dealing with that at such a young age. Were you aware of what was happening to you? Were you aware that it wasn't right?
Yeah, I was. But life was difficult because I had added extras onto it. My mother was seriously ill and dying. And I had a younger sister that I needed to protect. So I went along with it, really, because there was so much going on in my life that, you know, I was trying to do everything. So, and it wasn't until I got older, I realised how much impact this has had on my life and my children and the people around me who I love. So yes, I decided to do something about it.
What was the catalyst for you to say, enough, I need this to change, I need this to stop?
I think as I've got older, I've changed a lot. I used to be very angry and violent, and I wasn't a very nice person. And I think I just got to a point 2.5 years ago that I needed to make changes. And it had such a impact on my life that I needed to put things right, not just for me, but for my children. And my children were old enough to understand now. And I have grandchildren who are young enough not to know. So it was right. It was the right time to do it.
When you were growing up and this was happening, how did it play out in your life, the going to school and the seeing friends? How did it affect you?
I think I kind of just got on with it. But I think because my mother was dying, and she'd been ill for quite a while, I think it was just that I had so much to do that I don't think I really felt about it. I think I just put it more into anger than I did anything else. So I was. I'd go from 0 to 100 in seconds, and I would be very, I wouldn't say violent, but I would be very angry with everybody. So, and that was on my everyday life. So I think I just kind of dealt with it. It was just part of my life, really.
Did your mum know what was happening?
I think she probably did. But mum was so poorly and so ill. She had breast cancer. She was very young as well. She had 5 children. I think life for her must have been horrendous, really. I don't think she had a very good life. There's a lot of me that is hoping she didn't know, but I think probably deep down she did, but where she had so much going on with her life, I don't think it was even thought about.
I can't imagine what it must be like to have to deal with something like sexual abuse on such a regular basis whilst you're also having to deal with what you know is going to be the death of your mum. I mean, how did you even begin to cope? What were your coping mechanisms?
I had a very good friend. He was older than me, slightly older than me, and he used to come to the house, he would kind of know. He didn't know what was going on with my stepfather, but he kind of knew life was difficult for me. So it would be a case of, here's the crash helmet, or here's some money, get on the bus, come to the house, I'll pick the helmet up and I'll take you out. So he was kind of my brick, really. But I had a younger sister, and she was, I want to say, the most important thing in my life, and I needed to protect her and make sure she was safe. So they were kind of my reasoning for carrying on how I carried on.
How often did this play out? I mean, how often were you having to deal with these advances, these incidents?
Mostly every day, every night, every bedtime. Sometimes throughout the day, one of my brothers said that he had come home from wherever he had been and saw things. So it was kind of on a regular basis. And I think as I got older, it was more regular. So, but most times, bedtimes.
You obviously, you've talked about your siblings. Apart from those sort of one or two incidents, they weren't aware really what was going on?
No, not really. I think my brother, one of my brothers, knew more. I suppose because we'd lost our mother, you know, I had older brothers and sisters, you know, that was a huge part of our lives taken away from us, and we were all so, I want to say, young and still naive, really. So I think we were all kind of wrapped up in that sort of life to worry about anything else, what was going on in our lives. And I think in family situations like this, you kind of hide it, don't you? You don't want people to know, and will people believe you? You know, how much would they believe, or would they say, for me anyway, you've lost your mother and you're seeking, I want to say, someone to just help you, and you're using this as your helping mechanism, I suppose. So that that was kind of quite difficult because it was, you know, losing mum was the main thing, and I was scared that people may not ever believe what I have to say. So,
what age were you when your mum died?
13.
And she died from breast cancer.
Yeah.
And you were left to pick up the pieces. At what stage after that, and presumably you were numb to everything at that stage, at what stage did you then say, right, enough? How did you get yourself out of the situation that you were in?
Well, funny enough, I always had this, I don't know really whether it was a made-up belief that I told the friend of mine who used to take me out, and he took me to the police station. And I had this, I suppose it was a figment of imagination. I don't know. It was my escape, my get out clause. But my brother tells me that he told me that I had to go and live with my real father. So I ended up at 14 living with my real dad. So it wasn't long after mum died that I moved up with my dad. So I was out of the whole family, I want to say family home. Yeah, leaving my younger sister behind, I'm afraid.
And how did you feel about that?
That was awful. I dread to think how she thought about it, because she was a lot younger than me. I couldn't tell anyone, so I, for me, it became more of what was best for me, and I had no choice. I never thought I would ever pluck up the courage to go to the police, to be quite honest. And the last time I went to see him, I asked him if he would tell his daughter the truth, because I think after 30 odd years, it was about time she knew the truth. And she's a lot older now. And he said he would tell her, but unfortunately he didn't. So I then paid him another visit and told him what I was going to do. And I came home, rung the police, and that was the start, you know, and I didn't look back.
That moment, walking in to the house and saying, you know, this is what I need you to do, or I am going to start legal proceedings. How on earth do you get yourself into that mindset where you're able to do something like that?
I think I'm being really selfish, I think, or I think I was being very selfish. It was all about me now. It wasn't about my sisters, my brothers, protecting anyone anymore. It was all about me. It was my time. It was my time to stand up and say, actually, you did this to me and you are now going to pay. Yeah.
You successfully went to court. Has that given you a sense of empowerment? Have you had the closure that you were looking for in any sense?
Yeah, I feel as though I have, but I feel as though I want to do more. I want to help, because there's probably hundreds of people out there probably wondering whether they would ever say anything to anyone, whether they would ever even walk into a police station or even ring the police. And it is probably the most difficult thing I've ever done in my life. But I have not looked back, you know, and it's changed me as a person. I feel more confident. I feel, I can feel like I'm quite happy to talk about it. I think it will still have an impact on my life. But I've feel more, I can give more now. I can be a good mum. I can support my grandchildren. I can be a good wife. And I can, well, I want to say conquer the world now, which is a bit weird.
But do you know what? That's how you come across. It's amazing. When you walked into the office the other week and said, this is what I want to do, and this is why I want to do it, I was blown away. It's amazing that you're able to sort of come in and, you know, and I see it as incredibly courageous, incredibly brave. Jane, I'm going to bring you back in. You've been working with Hannah through this, and you've been her sort of advisor and helping her through the process. First off, tell me about your thoughts about how she's doing, how she's done, how she's coping.
Basically, I think Hannah's been absolutely really, really brave to actually have to take a family member to court and go through that process. But being there helping Hannah and, you know, actually standing with her in that court, she was amazing. And I believe everything was Hannah's choice. But in my heart, I knew it was the right time for her.
You, in terms of your work, do you work just with Hannah, or do you work with lots of people who've been in this situation?
Yeah, no, I've got quite a big caseload. So, you know, I get referrals from outside agency. I can get self-referrals from the actual victims. And then, obviously, I put the support in place for them and just help them through difficult times.
We've heard such a compelling story here of what happened to Hannah. How typical is that story? I presume she's not in any way alone. There are lots of people in this situation right now.
Yes, there is. Obviously, you know, I'm not going to talk for others, but all I can say is yes, there is.
What can people do? I mean, we've heard the amount of courage that Hannah, you know, you had to sort of pluck up and go, right, this is it. And it took you decades to do, completely understandably. Of course it did. What can people do if they are in this situation and think, right, I need to stop this?
I think it's about, you know, it's their choice again. And I think knowing that there's somebody out there to support them through this, and obviously, you know, support them through a police process, I think that would help more people to come forward, knowing that they haven't got to do it alone.
What would be your advice, both of you, if someone's listening to this and thinking, do you know what, this is me? How do you sort of advise someone to take the next step?
Well, for me, I think you've got to get to a point where you've just got to do it. You know, I never look back from 2.5 years ago, you know, and there is rough and there is, you do have some real bad days, you know, where you think, oh my God, what have I done? I've destroyed not only my life, but other people's, you know, preferably members of family. And yeah, you have ups and downs, and you doubt yourself, and you then question. But for me, I knew what was right. I knew the truth. He knew the truth. And I needed to do something about it, because otherwise it eats you up for the rest of your life. It will always be there, but the good news is I'm not alone with this no more. You know, my family know. My sister was amazing, my older sister. I could not have done this without her support too. But you've got to do it. You've just got to do it. And I didn't want him to die and nothing be done. I wanted him to know what he actually done to me.
When you told your siblings and you know and you said to them, look, this has been happening and this is what I'm going to do, what were you apprehensive about doing that? What sort of reception did you think you were going to get, and what was the feeling after telling them?
Well, I kind of did it all in one hit. I don't kind of beat around the bush, I'm afraid. And I saw him. I went to see him, and then I saw my sister. I saw my two brothers, and I kind of told them all on the same day what I was doing.
Wow, goodness me! I mean, emotionally, that must leave you pretty bereft by the end of the day, I would think, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was. And I suppose it was kind of, for them as well, a shock to them because they, well, you know. but they were very supportive, my brothers and sisters, and they said that I've just got to do what's right for me. The downside of it is my younger sister doesn't talk to me anymore. I can understand how she must be feeling, but she's still my sister and I still love her and I will always love her. So, but they've just kind of just said, you've got to do what's right for you. And even my children, I mean, my children haven't said a lot, but they've been very supportive throughout the whole lot. Yeah.
Jane, just picking up there on one of Hannah's points, you know, especially in a family situation like this, it does have consequences. It has consequences when you finally say, you know, this is what's happened and, you know, and I'm going to go to the police. I'm going to talk to somebody. How, if somebody comes to you and says to you, I am really worried about doing this. I'm worried because my sister's not going to talk to me anymore. My brother's going to not talk to me anymore. What would your advice be? Then, if someone's worrying about what a family member will think, what would you advise?
I would probably advise them to obviously think about it because, yes, it, within a family, it's opening up a can of worms. It's going to cause a lot of upset, distraught. My advice would be maybe tell family members that, you know, this is what's happened and this is your decision. But again, I can only sort of support them and advise them. But that's what I would do, is just support them and just sort of explain, you know, what could happen, how it can affect you. So go from there.
How important is that element of choice when you are working with someone who's been in this situation? I mean, coming here today, you've been really supportive of Hannah and all the way along saying, are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you want to talk on the radio? And are you sure you want to tell people? How, and presumably it's about empowerment, is it? It's about giving people back the chance to take their own decisions.
Yeah. My role is to support that person, and obviously it's their choice, and I would support them in that.
It's such a difficult situation. I mean, have you at any point, Hannah, regretted having told people, having moved that process forward, haven't taken it to the police? Have you ever had that moment? And in your dark times, what makes you think, do you know what? No, I have done the right thing, and I can keep going, and you know, and I've got a whole future ahead of me.
Yeah, but it's, you do have doubts, and I did. I had many. especially in telling the whole family on what I was doing, because we'd all suffered so much through our lives, you know. But I have not looked back. It's if it actually happened to you, you've got to take control of it. And only you can be the one who can control it. No one else. I mean, yeah, Jane was there to support me, and she was my brick. You know, I didn't want anyone else there. I didn't want the family there, because for me, them knowing what they knew was enough. I didn't want them knowing any more, and they still don't know to a degree everything. But I have not. I've changed. I'm so much better. Sometimes I still have a moment. I'm sure I will for the rest of my life, especially with my younger sister. But no, I haven't regretted anything, not at all, not one moment. And if I have, I've picked myself back up again and gave myself a little kick to say, actually, no, this needs to be done. And I've just got a, no matter what, you know, no matter what the family thinks, it's not about the family anymore. It's not about anybody else. It's not about my children anymore. You know, they live with it for a long time as well. It's about me, and I was important, and I needed to do it.
And with that totally in mind, you do have your lovely family, and how is your relationship with your husband? Has that been affected by what happened, or do you find yourself sort of, you know, he's been that kind of supportive role for you?
He's always been there for me. I think for husbands or partners, it must be very difficult. I couldn't imagine how his life has been. But that was where I became quite selfish, and I think he knew that, because it, as much as he had an opinion, and he was entitled to an opinion, the same as everybody else, and I took on board his opinions, but it wasn't about him. He had to go with the flow, really. He had, I feel really horrible in saying this, he had no choice. You know, if he loved me, and he dearly does love me, it was something he had to ride the storm with me, and we'd get through it. We'd have to get through it. And he has, and luckily he still does love me, and he's there.
We're moving towards Christmas. We're told that this is a time when domestic violence increases, that people are in these situations a lot more frequently than maybe they are the rest of the year because of alcohol. Everyone's at home. It becomes a very pressure cooker situation in the family home. And then equally, you have people who will be living through your experience right now and thinking, how do I move on? Just with them in mind, Hannah, what's your advice to them?
Pick up the phone, talk to someone. You know, you can stop the process whenever you want to with a degree, but you need to talk about it. You know, and with Jane, the rape crisis counsellors, the support I've had, they have been amazing. And without them, and without Jane, I would never, I think I probably would have fallen a lot more. But they were brilliant. They have been there. You know, if I had a rough day, I only had to pick up the phone. But you do need to talk about it. I think it's the only way you can deal with it. I wouldn't want to die knowing that I haven't done anything about it and taken it to my grave, probably with me. It has to come out, and, you know, people will deal with it the way they need to deal with it. It's all about you. It's all about the person who has had the abuse.
Jane, how do you pick up the phone? How do you even start that process? Where do you call? What do you do?
When I get a referral through, or the actual person does ring me, I would just sort of introduce myself, introduce the ISFA service. And
what's ISFA?
ISFA is Independent Sexual Violence Advisor. I would introduce that and tell them what we can do, because, you know, some people, they just want to talk to somebody, not necessarily go through the police process or go through a court process. But, you know, you don't have to do that. If it's just you want to talk to somebody, then obviously, you know, you can pick up that phone, you can send an email, however way you feel that you want to talk to somebody. And then, you know, we can put the support in place and go from there.
You can call up and you can talk.
Yes.
And it's just relieving that pressure a little bit, and presumably giving you some space and some thinking time to think, you know, do I want to take the next step?
Yes. Yeah. I would obviously sort of explain the role in full detail, and then, you know, I would leave it with them. It's their choice which way they want to go through with it. So, you know, some majority do go through the police process, but there are some who just need that support and counselling just to sort of help them through.
How do we get in touch with you, Jane, if someone's listening and they think, right, I'm going to do this?
Yeah, they can send me an email. My email address is isva@hamptontrust.org.uk.
And just spell that out for me, if you will.
That's ISVA. At Hampton, Hampton, Trust, Trust, .org.uk. Hampton Trust is one word too. And everything is confidential.
So it's just a chance to really just talk to someone. And Hannah, I mean, in terms of speaking to someone, you touched on it there, speaking to someone who maybe is completely impartial, doesn't know anything. How important is that?
I think it's really important because they won't judge you. You know, they're there to help. They're there to support. There's no judgmental. I think these sort of people, they listen. Jane listened, you know, the police listened. You know, they're not involved in the family, so it's not a secret. They're there to help.
I can't thank you enough for coming in and sharing your story. I can't tell you how brave I think you are. It's amazing that you've come in and done this. Thank you so much for coming in, Hannah. I just wish you and your family a great Christmas. Like I say, the feeling that I get from you is one of empowerment, and I love the fact that you've taken charge. You kind of really get that from you. So I just wish you the best of luck. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And Jane, just one more time, that email address. If someone's been listening and they want to get in touch, what's that email address one more time?
It's isva@hamptontrust.org.uk.
Thank you so much, both of you, for coming in. So a hard-hitting Friday report then. Thank you so much to Hannah, not her real name. We have changed her name. And also to Jane Brading, who have been in the studio today to talk about their first-hand experiences. And if something that you've heard has affected you, or you are affected by the issues we've talked about, or know someone who is, then there are plenty of options in terms of getting some advice and getting some help and just finding someone to talk to. Jane's from the Hampton Trust ISVA service. That's ISVA. It's been running for 5 years and it works with men and women, the survivors of sexual violence aged over 18. It's in fact seen a bit of a rise in referrals over the years. It can offer emotional support, advice, guidance, help through the criminal justice procedure, also signposting people to the relevant services. And if you want to get in touch, there is a mobile phone number. It is 07930 932249. Alternatively, you could email isva@hamptontrust.org.uk or head to the website hamptontrust.org.uk. You could also contact the Southampton Crisis Centre for Counselling. The Southampton Rape Crisis Centre is where you can go for that, and it's southamptonrapecrisis.com. All of those details on our website, iwradio.co.uk. And very finally, just to let you know that thanks to her courageousness and going through the court procedure, Hannah did actually secure a conviction. The man who abused her has been sent to prison for 6 years. That case successfully concluded on the mainland earlier this year. And thank you so much once again to Jane and to Hannah for coming in.
The Friday Report with Lucy Morgan on Isle of Wight Radio.